Hello, and welcome to another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm in the studio with my co-host, Dean Welty, and today we're going to be addressing the very sensitive topic of pornography. Specifically, we'll discuss how pornography has impacted our culture and continues to do so. We'll also bring you up to speed on some efforts across the country to bring awareness to the hazards of this blight and how those efforts have fared. But first, I'd like to share a scripture to lay an important foundation. We know that as Christians, we are commanded to love God with all of our hearts, all of our souls, and all of our minds. And as far as loving God with all of our minds go, I'm always taken back to this verse from Philippians 4:8. Whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. I love that verse, Dean, and I know that you have another verse that comes to your mind on this whole topic from 1 John, I think. Would you share that with us as we get started today?
Yeah, thank you, Rita. I am always struck by the verse in 1 John, verses 15 and 16, where it says, "Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world." The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. I think that's what you're going to be talking about today.
I think that's it. And you know, hearing you share that scripture reminds me of something I read recently in a devotional, and it was a discussion of how every day as we go about our lives, we're never really in a neutral position in our relationship toward the Father. Yes. We're either growing closer to Him or we are backsliding and moving away. And so that was a good reminder for me to be consciously, every day, purposefully making those choices about what I do with my time, you know, the thoughts that I'm going to allow my mind to entertain, my attitudes, trying to move closer to the Father. Now, Dean, as we get started, I hope you're not going to be offended by this.
What's going on?
The fact is, you are a few years older than me.
One or two.
My perception is that our culture today is radically different in terms of its standards for decency, especially just in this whole area of sexuality, than it was when you grew up and started to raise a family. What we allow, what we consider acceptable, whether it's an ad in a magazine, a television show, the lyrics and music we hear on the radio, the standards just seem to have changed so much. Is that correct? And can you comment on that?
Well, just for the record, and so that our listeners know that there are a few years between
yeah,
us.
Yeah, a few.
You weren't born when I was married, so there is a gap, and the culture was very different. But I want to go back to the verse that you introduced us with. That great verse from Philippians
yes.
about whatever is true and whatever is pure, think about these things. That verse was on top of our television set when our children were growing up.
I love
Janet
that.
Put it there. Mm. So that our children would know what they can watch and what they are not to be watching.
That's the standard.
That's the standard
for us. It's not just, is there something wrong with this?
That's right.
But is there something good about this?
Exactly. And the same thing applies to movies, now that you say that. I don't want to go to a movie unless I come out of that theater a better person than what I went in. There has to be something morally, socially, spiritually redeeming
yes.
if I'm going to spend 2 hours watching
yep.
that screen.
Same with a book.
Same with a book. Same with anything. Okay, well, back to your question.
Yep.
The question was, the culture that I grew up in contrast to the culture that you grew up in or that your children are growing up in. And I would point to four specific ways in which our culture today is radically different in the area of sexual morality. Number one, most of us were raised with an intact family, a loving father, a loving mother who loved each other, and they modeled the way that we were to live. In fidelity, in integrity, in purity, in every area of our lives. So an intact family. Many of our children, unfortunately, don't have that benefit. The second thing is, we were raised in a tight-knit church community that preached the Word of God every Sunday. We had our youth group, the same thing. In fact, we heard in our youth group time and time again, keep thyself pure. We knew what that meant, and that was always in front of us. And premarital pregnancies were almost unheard of, certainly in our church and in our public school as well. Third, the culture itself, and particularly the entertainment industry, had much higher standards of morality in which adults were faithful to each other and to their marriage vows. They were our role models. And of course, in contrast today, we see things on TV in which immorality and explicit extramarital sexual behavior is applauded as something that we should pursue whenever possible. A huge, huge difference. Finally, on the subject today of pornography, that was much less accessible and considered shameful. If you lived in a town and you wanted to look at pornography, you had to roll up your coat collar and go across to the other side of the tracks to try to find something from behind the counter. Of course, it's easily, most of all, the change in the internet. Even when you're not looking for it, it pops up in front of you. Yeah. So those are just four major changes. You may think of some others.
Yeah, well, and I don't think we need to give evidence of what things are like today and how drastically different.
Right.
Our society is on all four of those points that you raised. So what I wonder then, was this a gradual change, do you think, or did it seem to happen suddenly? And to what do you attribute the change?
That's a great question. It's like the frog in the tub. The water just gradually gets hotter and he boils to death without knowing that he's in danger. I think there were several things. In the early 60s, we took Bible and prayer out of our public schools. That's the foundation for morality. Those are the standards. And when you remove that, you're in limbo. You have no clear standards for conduct. So that was one thing in the early 60s. But also in the 60s, another event took place. That was during the Vietnam War. People were in rebellion against our government, against our leadership. But something happened in 1969. You remember. You were probably there.
No.
Woodstock, New York, 1969. It was a rock music festival, and it was all about sex and drugs. There were no limits. Make love, not war. This was the high water mark of the counterculture movement in America. Shortly after that, of course, was Roe v. Wade in 1973. These things are on a continuum.
They're all linked.
And the slide has continued as pornography has become more accessible.
What I can say is that I certainly find myself wishing sometimes that we could turn back the clock in this area. And while I wasn't fully aware of it until I had kids, it is repulsive to me now to see how sexuality just predominates. It dominates our culture. It's in everything. You cannot get away from it.
Rita, you use the word repulsive. I was unaware of the pervasiveness of pornography in our culture until we started doing some studies on it as part of the Valley Family Forum. You were a part of that. But I have come to the place where I want to vomit when I see pornography on the shelves of our convenience stores at eye level to 10-year-olds across from the candy bars.
We're going to talk about that in a few minutes.
But that's the repulsiveness. In the same way that we transitioned from addiction to tobacco and how glamorous that was, I hope we come to that same point, becoming, as you say, repulsed at the sight of a pornography. Well, in fact, Rita, I think the crisis is far worse than just the general sexualization of our culture. America, I don't think it's too strong to say, is in the throes of a pornography epidemic. Mm-hmm. We get excited when there's a virus, the Zika virus.
Right.
This is an epidemic of social and moral proportions, equivalent or even far greater than that. It has exploded in the past few decades because of the internet and the access, the unlimited access to pornography.
Yeah.
Well, in fact, let me just give you a couple of examples. Dr. Gail Dines, she is the founder and president of a nonprofit organization called Culture Reframed, reports that 36% of the internet is pornography.
Wow.
40 million regular consumers of pornography in the United States alone. Porn sites get more visitors each month than Netflix, Amazon, and Twitter combined. And I'll add one more statistic. More money is spent on pornography than on baseball, basketball, and football combined.
Wow. It's hard to even
believe. It's the new American sport, it seems. Well, anyway, she went on to say that the porn industry aims to capture customers while they were young and then get them addicted for life. And she says that the average American child is exposed to hardcore pornography by age 11.
Oh, my goodness.
And that pornographers seem to be doing a good job of hooking children. And Rita, I have to say, I have personal experience with that. A very close friend of mine, a child, a seventh grader, inadvertently ran into pornography. Fortunately, he had a tender conscience, told his parents, and he repented. He felt so bad about it.
Wow.
That he took it to his parents and he confessed, he repented, but he vowed never to expose himself to that again.
And, you know, that's the really scary thing about it, especially for parents, is that you don't have to go out looking for it. It finds you.
Yes.
The people who peddle this stuff know how to get to kids at their most vulnerable and will do everything they can to hook them.
I will say this as well. Parents, Sunday school teachers, pastors, school teachers who say, my child wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Are delusional.
That's right.
It can happen, and when it happens, you won't know about it.
That's exactly right. Well, let's talk about some good news.
I mean, this gets me angry.
Yeah, so here's what I think is a very bright side to this. There is an increasing recognition that, in fact, pornography is a public health hazard, just like you mentioned smoking and drug addiction.
Yes.
And our society, parts of it are starting to wake up to the similarities there. There's a growing consensus among health experts, social scientists, and legal experts that pornography is not just some harmless private pursuit, but in fact is harming the people who consume it, their families, workplaces, and our communities as a whole.
Yes, and Rita, to that point, I was really pleased to see that the Republican Party incorporated in its party platform a reference to what you just said about pornography. And here's the actual language from the Republican Party platform, quote, pornography, with its harmful effects, especially on children, has become a public health crisis that is destroying the lives of millions. We encourage states to continue to fight this public menace and pledge our commitment to children's safety and well-being. And I might say adults' safety and well-being as well.
So this issue really has forced itself into the public policy realm just by virtue of how much damage it has done and will continue to do. Last year, Utah Governor Gary Herbert kickstarted a national debate by declaring pornography a public health hazard that leads to, and I quote, a broad spectrum of individual and public health impacts and social harms.
Let's break that down a little bit, these health impacts and social harms. I'd like to refer just to a couple of those, Rita, because a number of studies indicate that pornography is strongly linked to sexual aggression. Other experts argue that it functions like an addiction, similar to drugs, which you just mentioned. And let me just add one more thing. This is something that's just become increasingly clear to me, just since moving to the Valley. Not that the Valley has a particular problem more than any other area, but in response to people who say that pornography is a victimless activity, harmless, the evidence points to exactly the opposite conclusion. We see it, as you mentioned, like a drug addiction. Pornography, too. Three things. Mm-hmm. It is, first of all, addictive. Yeah. Then it becomes progressive.
Yes.
And it ends in becoming destructive,
yes,
in all manner of ways, whether it's to your children, to your marriage, criminal activity. In fact, we say pornography leaves, like drugs, a trail of ruined men, exploited women, and that enrages me. Abused children, disease, crime, and often violent death. Don't call this a harmless activity.
Absolutely not. And you know, everyone should be concerned about pornography and its effects and committed to fighting it. But I want to say a word to every woman out there who considers herself a feminist in the true sense of that word. If you are a feminist, you should be alarmed, maybe more than anyone else, by how pervasive pornography is, and you should be aware of how harmful it is to the way our society as a whole, and men in particular, view women. Pornography is demeaning and degrading toward women. Women are not objects, and that is how they are portrayed in pornography, from what I understand. And I believe studies show that men who view pornography tend to be aggressive toward women, tend to view them as unintelligent. I mean, there are all kinds of studies about the harm that is done toward the view of women and women's role in our culture by pornography.
The National Organization of Women ought to be at the forefront.
Absolutely.
Of this crusade. And Rita, you are parroting things that I have been reading about just in the last 24 hours. Pornography, we've already talked about this, objectifies women. They become sexual objects in the eyes of a man.
Yeah.
You spoke as a woman. You perhaps experienced this. I speak from the standpoint of a man. When a woman becomes objectified, mm-hmm, simply to become an object of a man's passion, mm-hmm, then men in turn become predators,
yes,
seeing women in that light.
Yes.
Women then feel, too many times because of pornography, feel that they have to fulfill that role, and men are only too glad,
yes,
to be a part of it.
Yes.
It is a tragedy on
is.
Both sides of the gender spectrum.
It is tragic. But
let's
go back to the positive.
<Didn't take>
So I mentioned that last year, Utah declared pornography a public health hazard. But Dean, guess which other state has just recently considered a resolution to address this as a public health issue? Can you guess?
Rita, Virginia is for lovers.
That's right.
It must be Virginia.
You got it, Dean. Good job.
Yeah.
Delegate Bob Marshall from Prince William proposed a resolution this year in the Virginia General Assembly to recognize, and I quote, the need for education, prevention, research, and policy change at the community and societal level in order to address the pornography epidemic that is harming the people of the Commonwealth and the nation, end quote. Now, just to be clear, this resolution did not advocate any kind of a ban or restriction, so it wasn't an issue of concern on First Amendment grounds in any way. It's more of a public awareness measure. And how do you think it was received, Dean?
Oh, with great, great enthusiasm. It has to
by
be.
By everybody?
Well, I pulled it up this morning, Rita, to read this text, and it reflects everything that you and I have been talking about, the violence and abuse of women and children, the increased likelihood that the girls will engage in group intercourse, increasing themes of risky sexual behaviors, degradation. Well, we're back to the negative again. But it really, it says we have got to recognize this as a public hazard. So was it greeted with enthusiasm?
Oh, I'm sure. But do you think there were any detractors? I mean, who could be opposed to something like this in light of everything we've just said, in light of all the studies about how bad it is, how harmful it is to women, to kids, to families? How do you think the media received it? Do you think it got any bad press? Surely not.
Well, I can't imagine. I can't imagine. It's like being against mother and apple pie.
Well, you should have seen. I didn't do research and gather up every news article, but I read a couple of just scathing articles about how terrible it was that Delegate Marshall should propose this and how he should mind his own business and the government shouldn't have anything to do with legislating morality. You know, we've heard that a time or two. But the good news is, the resolution this year passed in the House of Delegates by 82-8.
That means it had bipartisan support.
Yes.
Good.
Resounding
Wonderful.
Bipartisan support. Then it went over to the Senate, Dean, and it died in the Senate Rules Committee without a vote.
Do you know any of the conversation that went on in there? I would be interested.
I don't. And
How can they?
Yeah, I don't know how that
it's
could
outrageous.
Have happened. Yeah. I'd like to look into that a little bit more. Maybe we can give an update. But I hope that Delegate Marshall will pursue this again next year.
Good. Just for our listeners, Delegate Marshall was the first recipient of our Wilberforce Award, and he could get this award every year as far as I'm concerned. Maybe we need to repeat it.
He certainly qualifies
he
for it
every year.
No doubt about it. But, Dean, back to good news.
Yes.
Recognition of this pornography problem is really picking up. I already mentioned Utah. Mm-hmm. The National Center on Sexual Exploitation told WorldNet Daily that activists are working on similar measures in Arizona, Texas, Florida, West Virginia, and Alabama. There's proposed legislation in South Carolina that would require computers and devices sold in the state to have pornography-blocking filters that could only be removed after a fee is paid. I think that's a really interesting idea.
That is bold.
We'll have to follow that.
Yes.
And last month, in Canada, the Canadian Parliament passed a motion calling for a study to examine the public health effects of the ease of access and viewing of online and degrading sexually explicit material on women, children, and men.
It sounds like the ball is beginning to roll, and maybe we'll pick up speed, and maybe, as you say, next year our Senate can do a little better in Richmond. Well, Rita, you always remind me we're not just a chit-chat society.
That's right.
And if we're just out here blowing smoke, then we probably have better things that we can do. What can we do to address this problem?
I'd like for you to go first on this. And, you know, I would particularly like for you to talk about some of the things that the Valley Family Forum has done in the past to confront this issue. And I'm thinking, I know there was a time early on when the Valley Family Forum started sort of a campaign to get these sexually explicit magazines off of the shelves or at least covered up or put away where kids in convenience stores were not exposed to them. Can you tell us a little bit about that and then about the campaign for zoning ordinances?
Sure. Rita, before we do anything else, though, I think we have to address it on a personal basis.
Oh, good point.
To be aware of the problem. We have to pay attention to what's happening around us, and we have to take action in our own lives. Mm-hmm. And I love a verse from Psalm chapter 101, verse 3. I will set no evil thing before my eyes. I hate the work of those who do these things. So we really have to determine in our own lives that we are not going to be consumer of this filth. Yep. And wherever we see it pop up its ugly head, just like these Chuck E. Cheese gopher boards, whack-a-mole, we got to get our rubber hammer out and knock them back in their holes.
That's right.
So I'll go back. This happened 15 years ago in Harrisonburg, where I saw sexually explicit magazines on the sheets. Stores. Mm-hmm. We took this to their headquarters in Pennsylvania. They came down and met with us. And at one point I said, are you really supporting profit over principle? They were outraged that I would accuse them of this. But several weeks later, they took those magazines off their shelves.
Hey, I want to give a shout out to Sheetz
for
doing that. Kudos to them.
Absolutely.
And let's let that be an encouragement to everyone listening to this program that you can make a difference.
In fact, that really takes us to an action. Whenever I go into a Sheetz or a similar store, I want to see the manager. I take them around to the magazine shelf. Eye level to a 10-year-old across from the candy bars, I say, this does not belong in your store.
Yep.
They are, without exception, almost without exception, very receptive to my concern. But they have to report to the regional manager, to the whatever.
Right.
But I say, you just tell them, this angry old man came in here and caused you grief. But we must do that, whether it's a grocery store, at the checkout counter.
That's right.
We need to take that to the manager and say, would you please remove this from your shelf?
Amen.
Now, you want to go on to the SOBs?
Well, we are running out of time, but I'll just briefly summarize that several years ago, was it 10 or 15 years ago? It was a while ago. We in the Valley Family Forum worked with the city of Harrisonburg to tighten up the zoning ordinances so that we didn't have new sexually oriented businesses moving into town right next to churches and schools and daycares. And that is a perfectly legal, constitutional approach to dealing with the blight and all of these harmful societal effects of pornography that we've just discussed. And we were successful in doing that. So kudos to the city of Harrisonburg and everyone who was involved in that effort.
That was in 2003. We had three SOBs in Harrisonburg, sexually oriented businesses. We took it to the city council. They passed that ordinance to limit the time, manner, and place of operation of these renegades. And beyond that, it rippled to municipalities and counties in our surrounding area who did the same thing. We can make a difference. That's the point you're making.
Tell us, Dean, quickly, before we have to close, about some local experts and groups on this topic.
I would name four of them. First is Brad Huddleston. You can go to bradhuddleston.com. He has written extensively on this. He is available to churches, to any groups, to talk about it.
And we've had him on the program.
Yes, we have. Then there are groups for healing. Greater Hope is one. Eastgate Ministries is another. And then you have New Creation, which took over one of these former SOBs. We call it the Ultimate Makeover. All of these are in the valley to help eradicate, to address this problem. Well, this really concludes our program. I just hope you will share a concern about pornography and join us in this battle to bring virtue back to the valley and to our commonwealth. So again, our program has been on pornographic pandemic is what we call it. And if you'd like to listen to the program again or share it with your friends, go to our website, valleyfamilyforum.org. Click on the link to Crossroads on the homepage. We want to thank our sponsors at Blue Ridge Chimney Services, Dunaway Dentistry. If you're looking for help with your chimney or your teeth, please give them a call. And we want to thank all of you for your prayers, your encouragement, and your financial support. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation to help keep Crossroads on the air, do it by check to Crossroads at P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg, 22803. Thank you for joining us. I'm Dean Welty with Rita Dunaway, engineer Robbie Meadows. Join us again next week at the Crossroads for Faith and Culture Meet. Until then, have a great week, putting your faith into action.